Hello, I'm Manila Chan. You're tuned in to Modus Operandi. The SARS-CoV-2 outbreak, or better known as COVID, was declared a global pandemic by the WHO on March 11th of 2020, which sent governments around the world into a panic. But by December of 2021, the organization had a new concept to pitch to its 194 nation members, a so-called pandemic treaty that should have civilians around the world in a panic. We'll tell you all about that with a former WHO doctor. All right, let's get into the MO. The lockdowns, the masking, the pressure to vaccinate, the vax passes to travel or even eat at a restaurant. We all remember that, right? It was just 3 years ago that people were fighting over toilet paper at stores in the U.S. In the meantime, the World Health Organization has been diligently putting together plans for the next pandemic. In lieu of the great debacle in handling COVID-19, the WHO wants to lift that burden from local governments and sovereign states and have your country sign on to a pandemic treaty, which would remove any and all powers your own country has in handling a pandemic as it sees fit, a trade for a universal process as directed by the Director General at the WHO in Geneva. Oh, and the best part about this treaty, it doesn't even need your country's president or prime minister or head of state to agree on the declared status. Nope. Once your country signs this treaty, your country relinquishes all health sovereignty over to the WHO. And it specifically states that your elected leader of your democratically elected system is powerless to object. You don't have to believe me. They have it right there on the WHO website. They're not even trying to hide it. It's out in the open. To discuss this shockingly undemocratic health treaty is a brave doctor who has spent years of his career at the WHO in Geneva. Now, he's told me he has spent the last couple of years trying desperately to get the word out to no avail because the mainstream media won't discuss it. So this brave doctor is talking exclusively to us. Dr. David Bell is a former WHO doctor and scientist and has a background in epidemiology. He's joining us now from Texas. Now, Dr. Bell, the COVID pandemic seems to have upended the medical community writ large. The uniformity in which doctors were treating COVID patients across the U.S., is that normal for physicians or, like in pre-COVID times, did doctors treat patients more on an individual basis? And where do treatment directives or protocols usually come from? Is it the CDC, the NIH, the WHO?
Yeah, it's common. It's very unusual what has happened. It's common to have protocols or guidance on what to do, but they're expected to be taken, you know, supposed to take into account the clinical situation of the patient. So normally they're a guide and you look at the patient, you examine them, take the history, and then you decide on the best treatment based on that situation. It is extremely unusual for a respiratory virus, for instance, and guidelines can suggest that you use certain drugs or don't use other drugs, but the idea of banning safe drugs, so ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, you know, whether or not they're effective, the idea of banning them for respiratory tract infection is completely unprecedented. It hasn't happened before in my memory. So the guidelines will come from CDC, from WHO, etc. But as I said, they're intended as a guide. They're not intended to be followed to the letter. And in the end, it's the doctor-patient relationship and the doctor's assessment of that patient that should be the final arbiter on what management is recommended.
Now, as the world was in the grips of COVID, In 2021, the WHO quietly pitched an idea to its 194 member states, a so-called pandemic treaty, that would not only give this organization legally binding authority over its members' decision-making abilities on how to handle future pandemics, but it would include a digital passport and digital ID system. Would this effectively dissolve national sovereignty when it comes to people's health care?
Yeah, there's actually two things in progress from the WHO. There's the treaty and there's amendments to the international health regulations. And they both do essentially the same thing, but they're trying in two different directions. So the international health regulations, there's a version already in place. It was updated after the SARS outbreak in 2005. And it's already, it gives more powers to the WHO than people realize. But well, the amendments, and they're reflected in the treaty, the amendments will actually go to the World Health Assembly, which is the WHO's governing body, in May of this year. And they only, because that they have force under international law already, as the health regulations do. And so if the amendments only need to be accepted by 50% of the delegates there, the treaty will go next year probably to the World Health Assembly. But if the health regulation amendments are passed, that they already do what the treaty will be doing. So they work on a number of levels. They explicitly remove human rights, fundamental human rights from consideration. So it explicitly, the amendments cross out phrases around that they have to be instituted on the basis of the acceptance of fundamental human rights that are reflected in the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights from after the Second World War. And they replace that with wording about diversity and equity. And they say that these human rights, that these diversity and equity, whatever they mean, or coherence, are based on economic and social status of the person. So that they start off by taking away the idea that everyone is equal and putting in place that the rights of a person are based on economic and social situation. So that's a huge fundamental change to the whole way that we look at people and human rights. So then they aren't about pandemics, they're about any declared health emergency. And they state that a health emergency can be declared solely by the Director General, so a single person in charge of the WHO. And it can be on, there doesn't have to be even an outbreak. There needs to be a potential, or what the WHO director considers a potential for an outbreak. So that can be almost any health event. And when the Director General declares that, and he doesn't have to refer to an emergency committee, he can, or take their consideration, he can make this decision on his own. Then it gives him very wide-ranging powers. So firstly, it's the countries that agree to this are agreeing that recommendations are essentially binding to the country. They say that they undertake to follow recommendations. So they're not recommendations anymore, they're orders. And they cover a whole range of things. So they explicitly recover, they cover things like confinement of people in quarantine, stopping people traveling, injecting or medicating people, and insisting on medical examination. So they even take away the role of governments in, I think, very wrongly forcing those, and they allow this organization based in Geneva to force it on anyone in the world. This is in the wording of the amendments.
The WHO says going this route would level the playing field for poorer nations when it comes to future vaccines or treatment for diseases like cancer. And I'm going to paraphrase, but when it comes to sharing medicines or treatments, pandemic or not, don't allied nations already have mechanisms in place already to share? Why would this particular measure be necessary?
Yeah, so allied nations do already have these mechanisms, and there's also international mechanisms such as the Global Fund that are there to pool resources from different countries and allocate them on the basis of need. So there are good mechanisms to do this already that are much more in the control of countries. So yeah, it won't level the playing field. I mean, that's a fallacy. This is like, you know, the Soviet Union thinking everyone will eat well because, you know, they will level the playing field of the society there. So we can see from COVID what has happened. So we have had a group of people in Europe, essentially, you know, the WHO, pushing for lockdowns and mass vaccination through sub-Saharan Africa and Asia, where mortality from COVID is extremely low, but and largely because of lockdowns. Infant mortality is going up, malaria, TB, HIV, et cetera. These other large disease burdens that they have are going up. So what has happened is that we've seen the central authority move the emphasis on health away from what individual populations need and what their health burdens are to something that they deem is more important, even though it's a very low priority for these nations and these populations. So this will continue to happen. And it'll happen because, you know, underlying this, there's a lot of changes in the way the WHO is funded. There's increased private funding, increased corporate funding, and it's very directed. And corporate and private interests will direct funding, and so direct the WHO to work where they want it to, where it's profitable for them, and not where it's necessarily the best for the countries concerned. So always, and the WHO used to espouse this, that populations and communities knew best what their health priorities are, and they should be the decision-making powers. So this is upending the whole basis of the early years of the WHO, and it's moving everything back to a very centralized sort of colonialist mentality, where people at the center will decide what is best for others. And inevitably, because of what happens in these situations, it'll be what's best for them, and it'll end up being a negative for others. So the COVID response has massively increased inequality between countries, but also, most of how sub-Saharan Africa went into a reduction in gross domestic product and GDP, that translates directly into increased infant mortality. This was through lockdowns, closing markets, closing travel, etc., closing supply lines.
Another issue on national sovereignty. In this proposed treaty, which they expect to be ready in 2024, Article 9.1 of that treaty states that the WHO would no longer need to consult with the state or even attempt to obtain verification from the member state where this, what they call, reported event of concern is allegedly occurring before taking action. It's unclear what those actions might be, what limitations to them, if any, whereby the WHO's director general determines the status independent of what the elected leaders of that country has to say. Now, you've expressed valid concerns as a scientist, but what are your views on this as a citizen?
Yeah, obviously. There's a reason why we have sovereignty of nation states, and that's because they understand better the needs of their people. So, again, you know, the WHO will have power directly if the treaty is ratified, but they also have power even if you don't buy, because they can influence other countries to stop travel, to stop trade, to stop, you know, supply lines, etc. So particularly for smaller countries, this is going to have a huge impact. So it very much puts them at the mercy of these people in Geneva and thereby those who fund those people.
Dr. David Bell is going to stay with us. Coming up next, Bill Gates, Pfizer, the United States, China, just to name a few, are the major donors to the WHO. Does this influence their decision-making in Geneva? We're going to discuss it when we return. Sit tight. The MO will be right back.
I'll look forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence as own existence.
もう思い出せるな。あんな悲惨なな。悪魔の法則のようなことをもう忘れようと思って一生になってる。
Unit 731 was a unique organization in the history of the world. What they were trying to do was to simply do nothing short than build the most powerful and most deadly biological weapons program that the world had ever known.
それを各班にな作らして、それで再現性をしとったわけよ。取れたでな、その一回金を作るのに3人ぐらい殺しよったんや。
一般の丸太、木の丸太ですね、人間とも思わなかったんではないかと思いますよ。
赤ちゃんのな入った女の人を解剖してな、赤ちゃんを標本に入れるんや。お母さんも殺してな。
14歳の子供ですからね、まだやっぱり病気にかかった人、怪我をした人、こういった人の治療をやったりすると思ってたんです。ところがしまいにはね、細菌戦の専門技術になるというようなことが出てきましたけれども、
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. Dr. David Bell, a former WHO scientist, is sounding the alarm over this proposed WHO pandemic treaty. Now, Dr. Bell, renowned professor of international law, Dr. Francis Boyle, he's a JD and PhD at the University of Illinois, has been quoted by RFK Jr.'s Children's Defense publication called The Defender, calling this potentially illegal, saying, quote, the proposed WHO treaty violates the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, ratified in 1969, criticizing this new treaty as insidious and even medical totalitarianism. He says this will put nations into a scientific police state under the control of effectively the CDC, Bill Gates, and China, who pay a significant portion of their bills. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I can't comment on the Vienna Convention, but I'll defer to Francis Boyle on that. But yeah, the rest of what you say is certainly true. We've seen in the COVID response, and people are trying to pretend now that lockdowns are normal. In 2019, the WHO released its pandemic influenza guidelines, and they essentially stated that they didn't even mention the word lockdown. It was never a public health term before. It's a criminal term. It's lockdowns are things you do in jails. But they specifically said you should not close borders, you should not quarantine healthy people, you should not restrict trade, etc. Because the harm will be greater than the benefit, and it disproportionately harms low-income people. So those released just a few months before they completely changed direction, introduced this term called lockdowns to public health, and pretended it was normal response. It's not a normal response. It hasn't been done before. There is an experiment in the Ebola outbreak in West Africa where they did it for a few days, and it was shown to be poorly effective and a bad idea generally for the population. China supposedly locked down a bit in the SARS outbreak. China's a totalitarian society that locks down populations, you know, frequently for different reasons. So it's a new idea in public health, and the idea that, you know, as we saw, you can stop people from visiting the funerals of their family, you can stop partners being present at the birth of a baby. You rope off playgrounds so that children can no longer play. You know, these are extraordinary measures. They don't have any rational public health basis to them, especially with a virus like SARS-CoV-2, the COVID virus, where we knew from the start of 2020 that it was almost only affecting severely very old people and people with significant medical conditions such as diabetes and obesity. So it wasn't a rational public health response. It was a very irrational one. And it is clear that there's no looking back and saying this was a bad idea and looking at the evidence. If you look at the pandemic, the push for the pandemic treaty and the change in the international health regulations, etc., there's a very strong push to make this much faster and more intense in the future. So, yeah, it is. I mean, that was essentially a police state that we went through. It was ruled by emergency decree, and it was using terms and actual actions that we normally use in prison for civilian populations, confining them to their homes. So that is what is envisioned. And people need to sort of grasp this. It's not normal. And it's not anything to do with what democratic societies are supposed to be about.
The WHO got COVID wrong. The CDC and NIH got it wrong. Dr. Fauci, Bill Gates, Pfizer, Moderna, the lot of them got it wrong. Why then should the public trust these entities with their personal healthcare decisions going forward?
I don't think most of them got it wrong. I think they knew at the very start what the virus was. It was published in The Lancet, you know, that it highly disproportionately affects old people, etc., that children and young healthy adults are hardly ever severely affected. So they didn't get it wrong. They knew what the virus was like. They know basic public health. They know, and WHO published in 2019 that if you do this sort of thing, it will disproportionately harm people and cause more health problems than it will harm low-income people, cause more health problems than it solves. So they knew all this. So you have to assume that there are other motives. So there was it was successful in instigating an unprecedented shift in wealth from low to high income people. It was successful in showing that you can, even in Western populations and other populations used to democracy, that you can instill fear into people such that they will obey sort of fascist totalitarian dictates. So if that was the purpose of doing this, and I think both of those were important parts of it, then for these entities, it was very successful. It wasn't successful from a public health point of view, but it is hard to believe, given that the people doing it knew that this was a very poor public health response. It is hard to believe that that was ever the intent.
Are the WHO really as noble and benevolent as they appear, or as the mainstream media would present them to be? I mean, where does that money come from? Where does it go? And does it influence behaviors at the WHO?
So the WHO is a very large organization. It's got its offices in Geneva, 6 regional offices and country offices in a lot of countries. It's a large mix of people. It does a lot of useful things in a lot of countries. It brings technical expertise to countries that are lacking in certain expertise. It gives a lot of advice. It brings people together where they need to talk. So it does some very useful functions, and I think there is a need for international health coordination and, you know, guidance and support to countries that need it and ask for it. But it has changed over the years. There is this increase in private and corporate money, which is now a significant part of their budget, and is very directed. So you have parts of WHO that are still functioning properly as they should at a country level, but you have other parts that have clearly left the whole idea of community-based public health and moved to a sort of corporate model. So, you know, during the COVID response, I think WHO was probably a net harm to the world. But that doesn't mean everything the WHO is doing is a bad idea, or that the idea of having some sort of entity like the WHO, but with much better rules on conflict of interest and what they can actually do, it doesn't mean that that in itself is a bad idea.
Dr. David Bell, thank you so much for your fearless honesty and insight today. The mainstream media will tell you this treaty will create a fairer system and more equal outcomes when it comes to healthcare, but fail to admit that when it comes to diseases, be it COVID or cancer, no two bodies will ever respond the same when infected. But what this treaty will guarantee is that you no longer have medical sovereignty or dominion over your own body. That's gonna do it for this week's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next week to figure out the MO.